You're listening to Passions and Prologues, a literary podcast where each week I'll interview an author about a thing they love and how it inspires their work. I'm your host, Adam Sokol, and today's guest is Melissa De La Cruz, the New York Times best-selling young adult author of multiple series, including The Au Pairs, The Blue Bloods, and The Beauchamp Family. She also wrote the original novels for Disney's Descendants franchise. She has done just so many incredible things. She has a new book out called The Headmaster's List, which is described as One of Us is Lying meets Riverdale. It is definitely a very, very thrilling edge of your seat YA thriller. There is a fatal car crash that goes on, and then all these teens kind of come together to uncover the truth about what really happened. It's really, really incredible. Delightful book. I think you're going to love it. Our conversation today is all about something she's super passionate about, and that is being a mom, but not just being a mom, but being a mom to young and now growing slightly older students. It's really, really interesting. She talks about basically being what you might think of as like a room mom as her kids were growing up and all these different things. But what's really interesting about this conversation is we get into how her children's friends have sort of become her alpha and beta readers of her books, because they are the exact, people who she would want to read her books. So just really, really fascinating. Melissa has had an incredible career, not just as an author, but she is the founder of several very popular book festivals, which we talk about. And she's also had a long, long career in Hollywood that we get into. Just a whole bunch of really interesting things that we jump all around in, and I think you're going to really enjoy it. Before we get to that conversation, I want to give you a quick book recommendation. I finished The Night Ship by Jess Kidd. I really, really enjoyed Jess Kidd's previous book, Things in Jars, which is why I picked up The Night Ship. And this book is two different timelines, and it's based on a real life event, this epic historical shipwreck that occurred in the 1600s. I did not know that going in, and I found myself wondering throughout the first part of the book, like, wow, how did you come up with this incredible story? It's still phenomenal, but it makes sense that she found this very, very fascinating story of the shipwrecked Batavia. It is one of the kind of most famous, I guess, maritime disasters, and there's mutiny and there's all sorts of things that happen. One of the timelines is basically following that ship on its doomed journey. And the other timeline is in 1989, when a lonely boy named Gil is living off the coast of Western Australia in this like seasonal fishing community with his grandfather. And he feels very, very secluded and he doesn't have any friends. He struggles to fit in. And the story goes back and forth between these two timelines, and slowly but surely they're connected, and there seems to be some like hints of magic in here, and you wonder what's going on, how they're able to sort of connect. It really, really grew on me the more and more I kept with it. So I really think you'll enjoy that, especially if you're a fan of maritime books. So that is The Night Ship by Jess Kidd. If you want any book recommendations from me, you can always shoot me an email at passionsandprologues@gmail.com. Send me any ratings or reviews you've done of this podcast, and I will give you some customized book recommendations. Also, if you want to send me any of the things you are passionate about, you can send it to that same email address. I love reading those, and I give away a bookshop.org gift card every single month to one random person who has sent me their passions. So feel free to do that. And you can always find me on TikTok and Instagram at Passions and Prologues. Okay, that's enough housekeeping. I am so excited for you to listen to this conversation with Melissa De La Cruz, New York Times bestselling author of The Headmaster's List on Passions and Prologues.
Hi there, I'm Heather Drago.
And I'm Sarah Saunders.
We host the podcast, That's a Hard No, about saying no and setting boundaries,
so you can become that true and empowered you that this world needs. Saying no isn't just okay.
It's the key to living an authentic, fulfilling life.
I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor, so while this podcast is in no way a replacement for one-on-one therapy, I suppose I know what I'm talking about.
I'd say so. We talk about learning to say no and set healthy boundaries and how it impacts mental health, physical health, relationships, parenthood, and more.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit our website, hardnopodcast.com.
We're here to help you find your no and say it unapologetically.
That's a hard no.
Okay, Melissa, what is something you are super passionate about that we're going to be discussing today?
You know, it's funny when I found out I was going to be on Passions and the podcast, I thought, oh my God, what am I passionate about? And when you're describing, you know, something that gets authors to light up, you know, one thing that I really am passionate about that I tell writers to do is to really dig into your personal life, you know, not just your professional life. And for me, you know, my personal life for a long time was I was a brew mom for my daughter's class. So, yeah, I even got an award. You know, the end of elementary school, you get like a little award.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that, you know, that was part of it. She's not in elementary school anymore, but, you know, for, you know, whatever, 7 years from kindergarten to sixth grade, you know, I was just really a passionate mom. And I was a full-time mom and a full-time writer, you know, in such a way that I was, you know, to me, my identity when I was with my family, and this is still, you know, something that, you know, nobody in my family is at all impressed by anything that I do outside of it, you know. I mean, my career is just so, you know, I mean, just so outside of who I am when I'm at home. It's almost like, oh yeah, mom has to go on tour. That's weird. You know, mom's always just here for us, like into us.
Okay. And I love this so much. So I am the youngest of four siblings, and one of my two sisters has four kids, and my brother has three kids, and my sister, they're both incredible parents, but my sister has four kids, and I feel like you two are kindred spirits, because this is very much like she's a full-time mom, but she also is a lawyer, and she does like these incredible TikToks about the law where she's like got this big following, and she is such a mom of these kids, and she's so involved in everything. So I want to know, how did you kind of get into this, like becoming sort of the, like you said, like the classroom mom? How does one get into that?
You know, it's weird because I so remember, and I was a writer, you know, for 10 years before I had, we have one daughter before I had our kid. And so my entire life, you know, before that was just all about my career and all about writing. I worked in magazines. I was a journalist. And then, you know, I was just writing all the time. I worked from like, you know, because I, you know, we didn't have kids. Like I would write until like 2 or 5 a.m. I was a total night owl. You know, I would have like my life, you know, where I did whatever I wanted. And then at night is when I wrote. So That was how I worked, and having a kid just threw everything off. You know, I could not write at night. You know, I did not have the time to do that. And so I had to completely rewire my brain. And I didn't think that I would like being a mom at all, because I was kind of the person who didn't like kids at all. You know, I was a terrible babysitter, you know, and I thought kids were mostly really annoying. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it surprised me because, you know, when my baby was one of my best friends, who's a TV showrunner, was like, oh, and she didn't have kids at the time. She said, how do you like being a mom? And I said, God, I hate it. You know, it's so exhausting. And, you know, I'm just so not, you know, the person for this, you know, all the carrying the baby. My husband always carried the baby because I could not carry the baby. I wasn't strong enough I would be tired. My arms would literally, I was like not physically capable of the baby stuff. And then I just got, I think what happened was I was always working when she was in preschool, and, you know, and we had a nanny. And I had the nanny give out the birthday invites for her third birthday, because I thought I went to, you know, I didn't know any of the moms, but every time we got invited to a birthday party, we would show up, you know, just because you had to. And I just thought people would do that for me, you know, even if they didn't know me, you know, then they got an indict from the nanny that they showed up, because I showed up to everybody else's birthday and I didn't know them. But, you know, I was a number and here's my 3-year-old. And we had this party and literally only one mom showed up, one out of like the preschool class of 20 whose other birthday parties we'd been to. And I was just so floored. I told my sister, why didn't anybody come to Maddie's birthday? And she said, you have to befriend the moms. They're not going to come if they don't know you. And I said, what? Really? Like I went to everybody's party. I didn't know, you know? So she said, no, you got to put in the time. If you want Maddie to have friends, if you want her to have a life, you got to put in the time and get to know these people. And I said, oh my God. But when she told me that, I said, okay, I'm going all in. So starting kindergarten, I was like the most social person at the school. I literally, you know, just had a whole completely different personality and just decided that, you know, my daughter was going to be part of it. We were never going to have that debacle again of nobody coming to our party because nobody knew me. So it was 6 years of being completely into it. I would do all my mom work. So, yeah.
I love the idea of you saying like how exhausting it was like being a mom when your daughter was really young. But then like, I have to imagine doing all of the like the room mom stuff. Like I see my sister again, like how involved she is with their schools and how that must have been like an entire, because there's so much of like a hierarchy and politics when it comes to like school classes and everything. That had to be exhausting too, I imagine, right?
You know, it was funny because it is all these like little politics and little dramas. And I, you know, I did not find it exhausting. I found it kind of invigorating. I was like, oh yes, I'll be right in there with the gossip and with the elbows out and, you know, figuring out who we liked and who we didn't, you know. You know, when I moved to LA 20 years ago, you know, I thought about writing for Hollywood just because I was lonely, you know, because when you write books, when you're an author, it's a very, you know, solitary career. But when you write for TV, it's very collaborative and you get to see a lot of people. But I didn't really like to have that kind of group work in my work. So being a room mom and being part of the school, I was able to have that kind of social aspect of life without it affecting my career. So I think that's why I was really into it.
Yeah. So did it feel like, because I mean, anyone who knows your work, like you know, you write for all ages, but like some of your most popular, like most beloved stories are for, you know, younger readers. And so did you feel like, was there any connection between all of the interaction you were having with these young kids and the parents and everything and how you're, you know, writing about these different relationships and families and things in your stories, or was it wholly separate for you?
No, not separate at all. You know, and I was, when I started the Descendants books, my daughter was in first grade. And when they came out, the first book came out, she was in second grade. And literally all the class and my kid, were all in the Disney commercials, you know, all the kids saying we're so excited for the book are all my kid and her friends. So, you know, and seeing how excited they were for that project, I did think, oh, I think this is going to be okay. You know, I think we have a hit here.
I want to ask a little bit about that because you were just talking about how like your family kind of, like you said, like it's, you have this whole separate life for like your mom, but like to everyone who's listening to this or like people who will come to, you know, your book tour or anyone that'll go to like Y'all Fest and Y'all West, which you've also co-created, like these are people who are like, oh my gosh, that's Melissa De La Cruz. I want to meet her. I want to interact with her. But for, you know, your family, it's like, oh, it's, yeah, mom writes books. That's fun. But like you said, like when it's the Descendants, I'm just thinking about like, if my niece knew this, I'm going to score so many brownie points by telling her that we're talking, by the way. But like, how, like, did it feel, like you said, you could tell they kind of, you had a hit on your hand, but like, do you do that with some of your other books? Like, do you ask like the kids, like, hey, what are your thoughts on this? Like, do you think this is gonna like resonate? Or was that sort of just like a moment in time? Cause it was the Descendants, which was such like a phenomenon.
Yeah, no. A couple of Maddie's friends are my beta readers, and yeah, you know, they sign NDAs and they give me their notes. So shout out to Whitney. Hey, Whitney. You know, one of I've known Whitney since she was in kindergarten, and she reads my book. She's a big reader. So a bunch of, you know, my daughter, I think because I'm her mom. So I want to explain a little bit about how the work goes in our house. So yeah, in our house, we completely talk about the work as creative things. So we break down plots. We talk about character. We talk about plot. Problems all the time. So we talk about it as, you know, kind of this as the work, but we never talk about it as like, you know, the career, you know, mm-hmm, like, oh my God, I've got to do this, or, oh, you guys have to be nice to me, I'm filming a commercial. You know, that whole part of the career is not at all, you know, important in our house, but mm-hmm, actually making the books and, you know, talking about what makes a good book and what makes a good story is something that we always talk about at the dinner table. So I always joke that my kid is going to be a studio head, because all she does is say yes, no, that sucks, that's good, do that, mom, you know. she gives very good notes, so.
Mm-hmm. What I feel like you need to be like, I imagine for someone who has like had the level of success you had and you do so much, like the writing and the, you know, the film and TV stuff and, you know, things for Hallmark and all these different things, like I imagine that is probably really helpful just to have like a clear and concise, like, I guess, you know, as you said, it's your daughter. She's like, sometimes, you know, teenagers don't really care if they hurt your feelings. So it's just being like, no, this part's bad. Don't, you got to get rid of this. Like, I have to, that would be pretty helpful.
Oh, yeah, 100%, you know, and especially with them being in the age group right now, of Maddie, mm-hmm, and her friends being in the age group that I write for, it's really interesting to kind of see ideas. So, you know, there's a bunch of things that, you know, are inspired, you know, in the books from, you know, seeing how the kids relate to. But, you know, first and foremost, I write for myself, mm-hmm, you know, but definitely, you know, in Never After, we were going through a period where, you know, with bullying, and the school told us, you know, there's no such thing as bullying. And I said, okay, you can just take away the word, but, you know, because they said, we don't call it bullying. I'm like, all right, but there's still bullying.
You know, problem solved. You don't use the word. Congratulations. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So for example, for your newest book, The Headmaster's List, like, is, you mentioned kind of going through plot problems and like story points with your daughter, but, and her friends. Do you run, because you said you write for yourself first, which I love. Do you run by like the story with her before you start? Like when you have an inkling of idea, or I guess like at what point are you like, hey, I want some younger eyes on this?
Very late, you know, not at all in the beginning. I think my beta readers get the book when it's actually, I think, going into copy edit. Mm-hmm. So, and we have still, you know, when you go into copy edit, it's actually like the book has to be kind of locked. So I would say maybe the draft before copy edit, you know, before production, I send them out. And sometimes I forget, you know, I was like, oh, I forgot I have beaters. I got to send them the other books, you know? Yeah. So I only ask for help when I can't solve it myself, or I'm kind of choosing between two things, but, you know, I don't really, work with people in the idea stage. You know, those are all, mm-hmm, my ideas. Those are, you know, how I think, you know, I always say I'm kind of like a dictator. And I think as an author, you have to be, you know, really confident in mm-hmm, your story and your work.
Before we dive into your new book, I want to ask really quickly about, you know, because you're you're heavily involved in Y'all Fest and Y'all West, for people that don't know, like in the book kind of like conference space, yep, like those are two of just the biggest, most like wonderful examples of people coming together to celebrate books. Was there, like, when you got involved with those two, you know, incredible organizations, was there any connection between like being a room mom type of a situation and like being so, because I imagine like that has to be a little bit like herding cats too, like being, helping run these, oh, massive things.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you kind of hit the nail on the head, Margaret Stoll and I, who run both festivals, we're both the Rue moms, you know, and we both come from, you know, backgrounds where we like to organize things and we like to throw things, you know. She used to run the Children's Hospital Gala. That was her big charity. And I think we took, our talents outside of writing, you know, into the festival. I think we're both kind of those joiners, those workers, and we like, you know, getting people together. And, and it was kind of, just fortuitous that we met, you know, Jonathan Sanchez at Blue Bicycle Books, who asked Margie, you know, once, so there used to be in Charleston a book festival called the Capitol Book Fest. That was founded by or funded by the National Endowment of the Arts. And when they cut a lot of the funding, the Capitol Book Fest was one of the things that was cut. And it was so sad that that was cut because it's a beautiful book festival in Charleston. So Jonathan asked Margie, would you help, you know, I want to do another book festival or something to replace the Capitol Book Fest. She said, sure, but can it be for YA? Because that's what I write. And so Margie asked me to get involved with that. And, you know, we just compliment each other a lot. We've been doing, I think this is our 13th year in Charleston, and I think our 10th in Los Angeles. So, yeah, somebody said we have the most, the most functional marriage of anybody they know.
and on top of everything, like with directing, I have to, you mentioned, and it's something I've heard authors say hundreds of times about how writing is such a solitary thing. It's like, I always think of it as like this very lonely process that brings people together eventually. And like, you know, your books have been read by millions of people, but you don't see them reading them. You write the book, you put that out in the world. And like, I have to imagine, like you're literally, we were just before we started recording, you were talking about how you're just getting on book tour and you're going to get to meet all these people during that. But like, I have to imagine seeing thousands of people come together to celebrate books, especially young adult books. Like that has to be extremely satisfying for you. You strike me as a person who kind of feeds off that energy, or is it exhausting for you to partake in all this process of the book world?
You know, it's really exciting and it is really satisfying, especially when we open Y'all Fest or Y'all West in the big auditorium with 1,000 people and everybody's screaming, you know, and it's just, you know, just seeing all the readers being so excited. It's such an uplift. And, you know, all the kids that we bring in, because one of the things that we do is bring in kids from Title I schools, and they're able to pick a book and buy a book through our funding. And most of these kids have never owned a book before. So that's really, really satisfying. But at the end of the day, we are just dead. We are just so... Just where's that wheelbarrow? We're just going to collapse because, that energy, you know, is invigorating and then it just turns into exhaustion. So,
it is always, that's one thing the pandemic I've deeply missed. Like, I used to go to BookCon every year and get to see all these authors that I've interviewed and become friends with. But it's literally like watching rock stars in the 70s. It's so cool to like trying to go say hi to Victoria Schwab and I can't get to her because there's, 90 people around her that are wearing cat ears and trying to say hi. Yeah. But it is I have to imagine, like you said, by the end of the day, it's just where is a bed and a pillow for 8 hours?
Yeah. No.
So can you give my listeners a little bit of an introduction to The Headmaster's List, which is your newest book that you are just getting ready to go share with the world?
Yes. So The Headmaster's List was actually inspired a little bit about my experience as a mom in private school. And the original idea for the book was I was going to write about the parents. And when I was writing the proposal, you know, I kind of realized, oh, wait, I write for the kids. You know, why is the camera on the moms? You know, I think I actually have to shift it and write about the kids. So it's fiction. But at our school, you know, the honor roll is called the Headmaster's List. And then also at the yearly gala where we fundraise for the school, there's a group of donors called the Headmaster Circle, which, you know, we always joke that, oh, the kids from the Headmaster Circle are also on the Headmaster's list. That's not the case at our school. But then I thought, what if it was? What if it was the case at a school? What if, you know, being on the Headmaster's list was because your parent was a big donor, you know, and all the kind of the corruption behind that, you know, kind of with the Varsity Blues idea. And also just seeing just how competitive it is now for college. You know, it's just kind of whacked out how crazy it's become. You know, people are talking about getting their kids ready for college in sixth grade. And, you know, my daughter's in 10th grade and everybody said, you should start. So, you know, we're quote starting, but, you know, a part of me is also just wants her to, you know, have fun and just, you know, kind of don't worry about your future so much. I feel, you know, even though I worked really hard in high school, and I always tell her that was the hardest I've ever worked, was to try to get into an Ivy League school. And I still stand by that. That was probably the hardest time of my life, was, you know, working that hard and feeling like I had to sacrifice so much because I wanted, you know, this kind of academic success, you know, not going to party, not being allowed to go to parties, not being, you know, being able to be social. And I've been kind of making up for it for the rest of my life. My husband says, can we stop partying? It was a long time ago. You know, you're making up for something that you've made up for a long time ago. So the Headmaster's list is about four kids. And three of them are on the Headmaster's list. And there's a big party at the end of the year. And then there's a big fatal car crash. So Spencer, who's kind of this perfect, you know, scholarship kid, there's a lot of me and Spencer, you know, a lot of the things that she says about being, you know, the brown girl who's definitely felt that when I went to my private school because I was on scholarship and because we have this kid and we're so proud of her, you know, and, you know, really it's kind of this perfect, you know, kind of academic kid. And then her boyfriend, Ethan, is kind of this golden boy, soccer star, you know, rich kid from LA. And he was driving. And then there's Tabby, who's non-binary, whose parents were big donors. And she's on the Headmaster's list too. And then the boy who dies is Chris, whom everybody loved, but who had secrets of his own. So, you know, kind of putting these characters, you know, out in the world and, you know, having them, Spencer thinks that something else happened that night. So she's going to try to figure out what happened because she doesn't believe, she has a feeling that it wasn't quite what everybody said. Like Ethan, you know, because Ethan's kind of taken the rap for it. And she was just like, you know, why, you know, so she's trying to figure out whether it was something deliberate or, you know, something malicious. So.
And I'm so curious when you know, a lot of the stuff you've written, like you said, it can lean into some like fantasy or stuff that maybe not is like directly connected to a like very similar world to the one we actually live in. This is a story that is very much like could happen. Like you mentioned, like you have the Headmaster's list where, you know, the school that you're at, like when you write something like this, I'm just imagining like your daughter and your beta readers being like, this is kind of close to home. Like, did this feel closer to real life than some other books that you've written? Or are you able to just say like, this is just a story I'm writing. This has nothing to do with anything else going on in the world.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was just the seed of that idea, but then it's really not my daughter's school at all and not at all based on anybody that we know. So it is very much fiction, you know. In a way, it was probably based on other schools because I was probably feeling a lot more, you know, the ability to say, you know, fictionalize that part because, you know, our school, you know, we are still there and, you know, it's a little too close to our real life. And, you know, you definitely want to have a little bit of distance when you're writing fiction. So, yeah, no, it's very, very fictional. And one of the things that, you know, one of the things that for me make it, you know, definitely, oh, it's definitely not our life at all, is the two kind of teen podcasters. So they have kind of a serial killer, a murder gossip podcast based in LA. And at first I'd written them as adults, because I know a lot of my friends have podcasts, and I was kind of thinking, that's who they were. But then, mm-hmm. My editor said, does it make sense that these adults would be so obsessed with high school life and high school? And she was like, maybe they should be high school kids. And I said, oh my God, yes, of course. They should be high school kids. So yeah. So we don't have a teen podcast.
At least that you know of. At least that you know of, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. And I do, like, I love that you're able to tie that part in. And like, people, I also love the description of the book, people say, like, for fans of, like, the only murders in the building type of situation. Cause I do think having that connection of like the crime podcast, those become so prevalent in our life now. Like, they're, it seems like anytime anything happens that, so like having that in there, it also, I imagine for you is a fun, like, storytelling mechanism. Cause you can kind of step away from the story as like a, looking at it from a different angle. Is that like, was that intentional for you to be like, I want to be able to tell this in multiple avenues, or was it just kind of putting that in because it is something that is so prevalent in our society now?
Yeah, both. I mean, definitely being able to tell the story from a fun kind of different way and having people kind of comment. I do think, like, in our world of social media, it's just there's the story and then there's, the comments, there's the recaps, there's people talking about it. That's kind of how we absorb media now, mm-hmm. even with TV shows. Like, I'll watch a TV show and then I'll be like, oh, I can't wait to read the recap.
Yeah.
it's kind of a funny way that we all live now, where it gets, there's the main story, but then there's also the stories of people telling it. So it's kind of fascinating. Yeah.
I'm even worse than that. I will sometimes not even watch a show or a movie because it's just like, I'll just never get to it. And I'll just go on Vice or The Ringer or something. And I'll just like read the review and reactions to it and be like I'll have no content or a concept of what they're talking about. Be like, oh, I want to know what they thought about this particular movie. So I'm even worse than you. Like, I'll just sometimes read the review. I won't even be like, I wonder. I'll just read that part. I'm even worse.
Right? I mean, No, definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm.
So I always end every conversation by asking for a recommendation from the author. It could be a book recommendation. It could be a show. It could be it could be anything you want to recommend. I've had some people recommend just like go for a walk. Like, what is something that you want to recommend to people? Again, it could be a book, anything you want it to be, just like one recommendation that you want to leave my listeners with.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, so I think it's become my other passion is to get everybody to read War and Peace. So War and Peace is my favorite book of all time. I read it when I was 23 years old and deeply depressed. And I remember reading that book over a course of 6 months actually lifted me out of my depression. Mm-hmm. And it was the best, it was just such a great, it's a really long book. So I think people are like, I'm not going to read that doorstopper. Mm-hmm. Or, oh my God, it's War and Peace. It's like so old, And I always say you can skip all the war parts, all the stuff about the military stuff. I was kind of like, but it's about a family and it's about love. It's about love between a family, love between siblings. Like, I'd never read a novel that was about, a brother and a sister and that relationship and how wonderful that is. I have a little brother and it was just so... It's just about, and it's so wise about marriage, about love, about family. And then it's all these, there's all these fabulous, kind of Russian, balls and parties and just, but there's like, they're like in the sleigh in Russia on the, in the snow and they're happy. It's just, it's a book about happiness. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I really love about it. Like, it's a book about happiness. And I would say, you have to be a little older to read it because you've got to have the time and also the mentality. So I think that everybody in their 20s should read War and Peace.
I will say, as a person who has read, I have also read War and Peace. I'm a big Russian literature fan.
Yes.
And I will say, you might be the first person to ever describe any famous Russian literature book as
about
a book about happiness. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you're not going to, like, no one ever said that about Crime and Punishment. Like, it's it's never going to happen. Oh, that's a wonderful recommendation. This was so much fun. Melissa, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It was wonderful.
Passions and Prologues is proud to be an Evergreen podcast and was created by Adam Sokol. It was produced by Adam Sokol and Sean Rule Hoffman. And if you are interested in this podcast and any other Evergreen podcast, you can go to evergreenpodcast.com to discover all the different stories we have to tell.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and I want to tell you about my podcast called Can I Offer You Some Feedback? I'm a business consultant and executive coach with over 20 years' experience in change management, leadership development, and naturally providing feedback to high performers. My podcast is for those of you who have a complicated relationship with feedback, whether giving, receiving, avoiding, or seeking. Feedback is essential for our development. In each episode, you'll hear from real people across industries with their ideas, perspectives, and best practices on feedback. I'll also be sharing business bites with you, simple explanations of organizational tools, management techniques, and leadership philosophies that will help you and your businesses thrive. You can listen to Can I Offer You Some Feedback on your favorite podcast app or learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.